All righty, let's go. We're up to day five. So day five is a big day. We're going to talk mainly about one thing, the taninim, these big sea fish. We'll talk about that length, God willing. And we'll do like we do every time. We'll read the verses. Please use the chat button to ask any questions, or you could unmute yourself if you have anything you want to say out loud. And let's hope this is clear. Day five. Okay, so anybody who has a chumash, we're going to just read from verse 20. Chapter 1, verse 20. So day 5 starts like this. Vayom Elokim, and God said, Yishritzu hamayim. The waters should teem, sheret nefesh chaya. They should be full of creepy crawlies, you can call them, living beings. The waters should be full of this. We'll talk about what this includes. This includes fish. We'll explain all that. There should be birds flying over the earth. So now God's created birds. Over the expanse of the heaven. And God created, take careful note of the word over here, he created, which I've been harping at you since day one, that creation always means something from nothing. So what's going on over here? What's this word Vayivra doing over here? So we're going to have to talk about it. But Yevrelekim, God created as a taninim hagadolim, the great sea giants. What are they? We'll talk. But he's called nefesh achaya, all the living beings, harumeses, that creep, that crawl. Asher shartu hamayim l'mineim, which the water sort of created to their types. But he's called ifkanaf l'mineim, and every type of bird. But Yarolekim ketov, and God saw that all this was good. But Yevarech osam alukim lemer, God gave them a blessing. Now, this is the first time that we know since we've started this journey in the days of creation that God gave a blessing, right? We have God created this, he created that. Nobody yet, until day five, has received a blessing. Today, the fish, the big sea giants, the birds, they receive a blessing. So we have to explain that. Why did they merit a blessing? Why did they need one? And what happened with the blessing? Le'eman, what did God bless them? And he said, Peru Urvu, you should be fruitful and you should multiply. Umilu Esamayim, you should fill up the water. Vayamim and seas. Vaha'of Yerav Ba'aretz, and the bird shall increase on the earth. Vayhi Erev Vayivoka, it was evening and it was morning. Yom Chamishi, day number 5. So that's what we got, day number 5. So let me give a brief overview and then we'll get into detail into some of the points we want to talk about. So we explained, and we'll keep on saying this, that on day one, God created two things, two prototypes. He created material which would be for the heavens. He created material which will be anything for earth. So he created heaven, he created earth. It doesn't mean he necessarily created their shape, but he created the material, the matter, the stuff that would be everything for the heavens, and then he created the earth. And there was water everywhere. We explained what shape God gave to the heavens that we spoke about. The other day we spoke about what shape he gave to the earth, the dry land. And now on day 5, we're actually going to be talking about what form he gave to the water. So everything we're talking about today is water day. Today is all about what shape did he give to this stuff, this unlimited thing called the ocean, the water. What form did he give to it? So we spoke about the shape of the heaven. We spoke about the shape of the earth, partly. Day 6, we're going to talk about everything that goes on earth. Day 6 is going to be animals, wild animals, human beings. That's all things that take place on earth. Day 5 is all about the water. So everything that's going on today is all things that have been created from water, which tells us, the commentaries all say, which tells us that fish, it's an amazing thing. Right? I never knew this, but fish live in the water. That I knew. But where were fish created from? What's the material of fish? Well, I would say, I don't know. I don't know anything. I would say they're created from earth or something like that. Like there's a human being, like there's an animal. But the commentaries all say that the fish, and the verse really says it, the fish, the material for the fish is actually water. So it's actually congealed water, which is amazing. And that's why, believe it or not, fish swim in the water. It's not because random that that's just where they like to live. They live there because that's where their bodies come from. Just like human beings like to live on the earth because our body is created from the earth. So fish live in the water because their bodies come from the water, which was news to me. And that's what the verse says, and that's what the commentaries point out. that the water should give forth these fish. It means everything that was created on day five is all form given from the matter called water. Now, the question is like this. What about the birds, right? Am I going to be telling you today that birds are created from water? So like this, right? That would be obviously something very strange to us. So the commentaries, the Talmud talks about it. The Gemara talks about it. And there's actually a difference of opinion in the Gemara. One opinion says, yes, that birds are created from the water. But then the Gemara questions, and the Talmud says that there's another verse that says that they were created from the earth. We'll see it later one day. So were they created from the water? Were they created from the earth? And this is what the Talmud says. They were actually created from both. So birds are created from a mixture of earth and water. That's what they are. That means, I'm just thinking this aloud as we are speaking. Anything which flies, right? I think this we understand. Anything which flies means that it's not as attached to the earth as other things. If something flies, that means it's lighter. That means it naturally wants to lift itself up. Now, birds fly, which would mean that their main ingredient cannot be totally earth, because then they would sort of be bound to the ground. So when you have what the birds are actually made from, they're actually made from water and from earth, which may, I'm just thinking this loud, that may make them a little bit lighter. I mean, tell me what you think about this. They're a little bit lighter, that they're not 100% earth, but they're created from 50% earth, 50% water. And that, so why they on day five, if day five is only the water? So 50% is from the water. That's good. The other 50%, the commentaries say that the earth that's used to create birds is the earth, which is the bedrock of the ocean. So that means that it's all related to the ocean. The bedrock of the ocean, the karkayam, the earth that is the bedrock of the water, is, so it's sort of from the mud. You can say if you dig deep into the ocean and you get to that bottom layer where there's water and it's mud and there's the, and you have some water, some earth, it's wet. Out of that comes birds, and that is why the birds are told to us on day five. So we have fish, we have birds, we have creepy crawlies. All these things, their matter is from the water, and they're congealed and given a form, and that's what we have on day five. Now, let's talk about, this is going to be the main thing we're going to talk about tonight. So God created these big fish, the sea giants, the taninim hagadol. So we're going to do this in three layers, three levels. We'll say the simple explanation, we'll say the deeper explanation, and then if there's time, we'll say the even deeper explanation. So let's go along on this journey. It's really mind-blowing. It's if we get through this and it's clear, it'll be something incredible. So like simple explanation is literally sea giants. Massive, massive creatures. The Gemara, the sages talk about it. They exist somewhere. I don't know where. These massive things are like 500 miles by 500 miles long, like cities. And the Gemara goes and says stories about them. And I don't have any knowledge about this. What does this mean? But they're these massive creatures. That's what they are. Now, why, says the Ramban, says Nachmanides, does it say the word Vayivra, that he created them, which sounds like something from nothing? Says the Ramban, you're correct. These sea giants were created something from nothing, which means that what I've been telling you all along is not entirely true. It's mostly true that day one was, and I didn't mean to mislead you. This was, as I was reviewing it, I was like, hey, I may have said this slightly incorrectly. So on day one, God created the heavens, he created the earth. But there's two other instances during the 6 days of creation where he did create something as an exception, something from nothing. One of them is the sea giants. Those were created something from nothing. The second one, the other exception, which I didn't mention, is if you look on day six, which we'll talk about next week, God willing, when he created man, it says Vayivra. So the creation of man, human beings were also created something from nothing. So isn't this strange? Isn't this amazing? Right? Let's try and wrap our heads around this. We have, how many things do we have over the 6 days of creation that were created something from nothing? So day one, heaven and earth, something from nothing. After that, everything is formation of the heaven, of the earth, of the water. Then he created the sea giant, something from nothing. Then he created human beings, something from nothing. So what is that all about? So to say that he created the human being, something from nothing, I think we have an easier time understanding that. means we're talking about a brand new creation called a human being. We'll talk about it, God willing, next week. What is the makeup of a human being? What are we made out of? What's our ingredients? But that we could hear that we're so, the human being was the biggest creation, that came from a very deep place. But these sea giants, how does that come in? So I think this leads us to saying that these sea giants are obviously not simple sea giants. There's obviously something very, very deep going on that's being alluded to over here. And this big thing that we're talking about was created something from nothing. But I think the very fact that it says the word Bria, creation, by these taninim, these sea giants, that has to tell us that we're dealing with something very, very big. So before I go into the explanation, I just want to give a little, an ounce of understanding. We explained, and maybe this is a chance to explain this again. When it says that God created something from nothing, we said this on the first class, and let's repeat this. Something from nothing doesn't mean something from nowhere, from like a low place. It's from nowhere. This thing came out of nowhere. That's not what something from nothing means. Something from nothing means that when you have a place that's so infinite, it's so big, it doesn't have any dimension, the only word I could use to describe it is nothing. Something infinite. I have no number. I have no shape. I have no size. I have no color that I could say and describe what this thing is. So the only word I could use to describe it is actually the word nothing. What is this? It's nothing. But why? Because it's not this and it's not that and it's not 100 and it's not 1,000,000 and it's not 1,000,000,000,000 and it's not black and it's not blue. So what is it? It's nothing. Not because it's zero, because it's infinite. So when we say that God created something from nothing, it means he created something finite from something infinite. That was the rule that we laid down on day one, class number one. So whenever we see the words Bria, creation, we're always referring to creating something directly from a very, very infinite place. When God formed something on day two, day three, day four, that's a second step. The original initial creation took place on day one. Then later he gave it a shape, he gave it a form, he gave it a dimension. It's a second step process. It's a third step process. Today, when we create things, we're in like the millionth step of formation of the original creation. That's what we're doing today. It's not step one, it's not step two. We're at the very end of a process and we're just putting this piece with that piece. And what we're doing is, you know, number billion step in the formation of the world. That's what we're doing. But when God creates something directly, something from nothing, those things you know come from a very, very deep place because they came straight from this place called nothing. So when we're told that a human being was created something from nothing, that means that we come directly from an infinite place. It's not that God created something finite, then another thing, and eventually it turned into the human being. When he created the human being with the word Vayivra, that tells us that we are created, where are we from? From an infinite place. Direct. We are step number one. We are the first something that came from this infinite place. When we say that God created the sea giants, something from nothing, that means that these sea giants allude to a concept which is so big that they are the first step that came out of this infinite place, which we call nothing. So I hope my point that I'm making is clear. That means when we say something from nothing, we're alluding to this thing is directly created from such a deep place that the only word we could use to describe it is the word nothing, is the word ayin. But there's a verse, to give another 30 seconds of understanding. There's a verse that writes that, v'hachachma, the wisdom, may ayin timatze. Wisdom comes from nothing. Wisdom comes from nowhere. Right? Which simply understood means like a question. You read the verse as a question. Does wisdom come from nowhere? Wisdom's got to come from somewhere. But the Kabbalists say that's not what the verse means. The Kabbalists say that the verse is a statement that wisdom comes from nowhere. That means that when me and you are sitting and we're thinking and we're trying to understand Torah and suddenly popped into our heads a new thought, a new understanding, a chiddush, something new. Where did that thing come from? Where did it come from? You know what the answer is? Came from a place called nowhere. That's where it came from. What does that mean it came from nowhere? It came from God. It came from infinity. God in his infinite wisdom dropped into my head a Torah thought, a new idea. It comes from a deep place. And whenever something comes from a deep place, we're going to say that it comes from nowhere. It means that wisdom comes from a place of nothingness. When I think of a new idea, what I'm actually doing is taking from an infinite place and giving it a finite form as an idea. Every idea is finite. But where is it coming from? From an infinite place. That's why we're always going to call wisdom coming from what's beyond, which we'll call nothing. So having said that, let's try and understand a little bit what these sea giants are all about. So the Talmud talks about it at length. And the Talmud writes that these sea giants are actually referring to one of the very famous fish, one of the most famous fish that we know about in Torah, which is called the Leviathan, the Leviathan. There's a fish which is called the Leviathan. I'm told many, many esoteric and deep things about it. And all over you bump into, oh, this is the fish of the Leviathan, the Leviathan. And I'm going to say to you the words of the Talmud, and then we'll try and dissect it at level one, then we'll try at level two. So the Leviathan was originally created two, male and female. So there was one fish called the Leviathan, the Leviathan. There was created a male, it was created a female. Now, God saw that if this male and female come together, like every male and female naturally tend to do, they're going to have children. And God saw that if they come together and they start having children, they're going to fill up the earth and destroy it. If the Leviathan male and the Leviathan female come together, they're going to multiply and they're going to multiply and multiply until they're going to fill up the world and totally destroy this world, this planet Earth. So God said, we can't leave them. So what did he do? He took the male and he gave it a little bang. And what he basically did to the male was he didn't give the male fish, Leviathan, the ability to reproduce. So he took out that organ that gives the male fish the ability to reproduce. Then he wasn't done. He went to the female one and he killed it. He killed the female Leviathan. But he didn't end there. He took the female Leviathan and he pickled it. He salted it. And what's he going to do with it? Right? Whenever you pickle something, it's because you want to keep it for something later. And the answer is, here it comes, drum roll. He pickled it for the righteous people who are going to be eating from this female Leviathan fish before we go to the world to come. When Mashiach comes in the period called the world to come, the tzaddikim, those who merit, the righteous people are going to be eating from this dead, pickled, female Leviathan fish. When was it created? How old is it? It'll be about 6,000 years old. 7 maybe, depending on, without getting into that. So we have over here an absolutely strange picture, right? If that's a good enough word. We have a Leviathan, male and a female. There's an issue that if they multiply, why is there an issue with the Leviathan? That if they multiply, they're going to take over the world. We have to talk about that. What are we worried about exactly? Why are we not worried about any animal that they're going to reproduce and take over the world? There's a problem here. Now, what God does to take care of the problem is he kills the male. Sorry, he doesn't kill the male. He gives the male the takes away its ability to reproduce, takes away that organ, and then he kills the female, and he salts it, he pickles it, and who's going to eat this fish one day? The righteous people in the world to come. So obviously, this is very, very deep. Let us try and understand this. Rabbeinu Bachai over here on the page. Rabbeinu Bachai. The fish were not wiped out in the time of the Mabul. I'll get to that later if we have time. The commentaries say that the reason why the fish were not wiped out was because they got a blessing. Because we said that the fish were the ones that got a blessing, so that enabled them to survive the flood. We'll see if we have time to talk about it. So we have a story over here which we need to understand. Rabbeinu Bachai quotes the Rashba, one of the early Rishonim, and he explains it at two different levels. Let's start with level one. So I'm quoting Rabbeinu Bachai in the Rashba, and he says like this. He says, we know, and I didn't know this completely, but I guess it makes sense, that the concept of food that we know today is not necessarily the way food used to be, and it's not necessarily true that we understand exactly the power and the potency of what food can do. They explain like this. Every food has in it the ability to make a person healthy, that we know, to keep the body going. But it's very specific. Each food will do a very specific thing to the person. When I eat a certain food, that will strengthen a certain part of my body. Now he goes on to explain, when my body's strong, Not just does that make my body strong, but it makes my brain, my intellect, strengthens too. That means when we're deprived of food, we all know what happens to us on a fast day. Right? By the end of the day, when we haven't eaten for 24 hours or something like that, you know, our brains are working at very, very low capacity. For some people, at least. So when we eat food, what it's doing is strengthening the body, strengthening the intellect to be able to expand. And not just that, but every food will do it in a very different way. And it's very interesting, the talking about mind-altering substances. You know, Rabbeinu Bachai mentions over here that he says, we know today that there are certain medicines that people could take that help a person to expand his intellect. I don't know exactly what he's referring to, but we definitely know of such things today where we could take a substance, or herb or, you know, whatever it may be, and it could expand, it could do something, it could play around with our brains. So he says like this. He says, originally, the idea was that every time we eat, it should give us strength, not just physically, spiritually. It should allow us to understand concepts deeper and bigger than we did before we ate. He says, that's why you find all over the place talk about eating. It says all over the place you're going to find this talk about eating from the Levyasa, and you're going to find about, excuse me, before they used to prophesize, they used to take out music and make themselves happy. This is not food, but they used to get themselves with a very physical thing in a state of mind where they would be able to comprehend a deeper concept. And you find, let's say, when last week, Torah portion, what does Isaac ask before he gives his blessing to his son, to Yitzhak, to Esav, or to Yaakov? He says, bring me food. What did he want food for? He said he wanted food because he knew that that specific food would allow him to reach a higher place, and from that place he'll be able to bless his kids. So as you find, when Yisro came to visit Moshe and Aaron, they made a big party, they made a big su'uda. He says, whenever you find in our sages that they made a big su'uda, they made a big party, it always means that they understood that if we eat this food, it's going to strengthen our body, strengthen our soul, and allow us to comprehend something deeper. The most holy food that we are associated with in the Torah is the manna, the manna. The manna was almost spiritual, but it was physical, came down to this world. It was so spiritual that the sages say that it went into the body, it was totally digested, there was no waste, nothing came out. Because waste only comes out when there's garbage in there. When it's completely, basically pure, there's no need for that to leave the body. So the manna was such spiritual food, but it was physical. Why did that God give them the manna? What time in history did they receive the manna? Right before they went to receive the Torah at Mount Sinai. So I always understood that as just random. Happens to be that they received the manna before going to receive the Torah. The sages over here reveal it's not the case. They received the manna in order to be able to receive the Torah. Because how are you going to get a physical body to comprehend Torah? It's impossible. How are you going to get a physical entity and expect it to understand something which is totally 100% spiritual? How's it going to happen? The answer is, we need to purify the body and up its game. And how do you up its game? You give it food that will take you there. Spiritual food with a little bit of physicality in it. Eat the manna. That will give the person the ability to purify and become bigger, an expansion of his mind, and then they can receive the Torah. So that's a general overview of what food could do and what it really should do. So now he explains it. He explains that when we talk about the food of the Levyasan, the food of the Levyasan is a holy, holy food. It's a fish that was created on day 5. And that fish is so holy when it says a fish. Obviously, it doesn't mean the fish that we think of, but the concept of that. That fish has not been touched. Excuse me. That fish hasn't been damaged by anything that's gone on in the world. Everything the world's gone through until today, the amount of stuff, and you can call it pollution, spiritual pollution, physical pollution, the amount of things the world has gone through, the food that we eat today is very, very, very far from clean. Physically and spiritually. The Levyasan food is about comparable to the manna. It's the holiest food that can exist in this world. And God put it away. He salted it. That means he didn't want it to get ruined. He didn't want it to have to cycle through the earth and then become damaged. Because then we'll have lost the ability to eat food that will allow us to become bigger, to become higher. So he killed it, and he salted it, he pickled it, and he put it aside for the tzaddikim. Now, what are we going to do with this food before the world to come? So he says an incredible thing. He says, think about it like this. Try and picture for a minute. We're about to enter the world to come, right? We're about to go through this transition from physical beings to going into a place called the world to come, where we're going to live forever, a whole new dimension. How exactly are we going to get there, right? That's a question that obviously we don't have an answer to, but think about it for a minute. How are we going to travel from this world to the world to come? We're just going to, how are we going to get in there? And the answer is, Rabbeinu Machai reveals that the final meal that we're going to have as a physical meal is going to be the Leviathan fish. And that is what it's going to do is, because the Leviathan is basically spiritual, it was created on day 5 from nothing. It was created from such an infinite place that it was created something from nothing. It's such a spiritual entity with just a little bit of physicality that will give the body the ability to transcend from physical existence to the world to come. And that's going to be our last meal. And from there, we're going to just, it's going to be almost like the takeoff of the rocket as it propels up out of Earth. The what's going to propel us out of Earth is going to be this Leviathan fish. And that's going to be the final physical act that we're going to do in this world. And God is preserving it. Because if he wouldn't have preserved it and he would have allowed it to live in the world, then it would have been like any other food that we have today. And we would have no ability to transcend from physical to spiritual as physical beings. So he preserved something to leave it as basically a spiritual thing. It was created from nothing. He put it aside. He salted it, allowed it to stay exactly the way it is. And this is how we are going to go. And that's going to be our takeoff to transcend from human being in this world to being an existence, an entity in the world to come. That is step number one of what goes on with this Leviathan fish, why it was preserved, what it means to eat, and what does it mean that we're going to eat this right before the world to come. Now I want to add on one more layer before we get to the second step. Another layer to this, I'm going to share with you something I saw from one of the great Kabbalists. It's not Kabbalistic, this, but his name was the Ramah Mipanu. He was an Italian Kabbalist. He lived a little bit in the, you know, I think the end of the 15th century and a little bit after the Arizal. He lived in Italy and in a place called Panu, and he was called the Ramah Mipanu. So he writes like this. He writes, and this is like the sequel to what we just said. He writes that really before Adam sinned, he was going to live. There was no plan for him to die. He was going to live forever. Now think about it like this. Let's make an equation. If food strengthens us, imagine somebody's supposed to live forever. What does food do to him? It makes him sort of live bigger, makes him live more. If somebody's anyway living forever, so he doesn't need to eat, but he eats anyway, what that food's going to do to him, what that food's going to do to the person is it's going to expand the person. Because it doesn't have to expand his life, his or her life. What it has to do is just make the person bigger. And he says that was the plan. The plan was that Adam was not supposed to eat from the tree of knowledge, but he was supposed to eat from the other trees in the Garden of Eden. And those trees were so holy that as he ate from them, his intellect would expand and expand and expand until he himself would have traveled from this world to the world to come without dying. And then there'd be no need to die. Like we just explained that the Leviathan fish is going to be our bridge from this world to the world to come. Adam wouldn't have had to go through that step of dying and coming back and doing that. He would have stayed alive anyway, because that's how he was created. He would have eaten from the Garden of Eden, all those trees, the tree of life, and he would have become bigger and bigger and bigger until he would automatically just have moved into a place called the world to come. What happened was he sinned. And when he sinned, he was told, you're going to die. Now, the commentaries all say that God told him he's going to die on the day that he eats from the tree of knowledge, but he didn't. He died about 930 years later. So they explain that he really did die on that day. Because on that day, he was cut off. And he became an existence that will die. Think about it like this. if you have a branch of a tree that you cut off from the root, even though whatever's on that branch may be around for another week or so, but you're not going to say that that branch is alive. Even though it has a week of life of gas left in it, it's not alive anymore because it's cut off from its source. At that point, Adam became a human being that will die. Now, we have a problem. If he's going to die, how's he going to stop himself from dying? So the answer is he's going to eat food. And as the commentaries say, this is an unbelievable thing, and they bring it from even the philosophers. Every time we exhale breath, we're actually dying a little bit. We just let out a breath. Every time we exhale, they say we're losing more than we're taking in. And we're slowly, slowly, slowly dying. And say that's why people die a natural death. Why is it that people die? The answer is because they're breathing out. And as they breathe out, they just lost a little percentage of life. The only thing that has the ability to replace that is food. Food has the ability to replace the life that we lose as we exhale. But God cursed the ground. This is all from the great Kabbalist, the Ramamipan. God cursed the ground, and he cursed the food that will come out of it, that it will not have the ability to fully replace the life that we're losing as we're going along. That means that every time we go through life, every time, right? This is the one we know about, at least. As we're alive, we're slowly losing, and we're taking in, but we're always losing a drop more than we're taking in. So as we eat, because we're not eating clean food in a spiritual and physical sense, we're actually losing a little bit more than we're gaining. And that's why eventually people die. Because eventually, simply, it's gone. Life is over. That was all what happened with the curse of Adam. But if we would somehow be able to get back inside us clean food from the 6 days of creation, we would actually be able to replenish our life. And that's why we would be able to go from there into the world to come, to a place of eternity. Right now, there's no ability for us to live forever. We're losing life, and the food that we're eating is not replacing it. And there's no food in the world today that could replace it. But God preserved one thing called the Leviathan. And this fish, he salted it, he pickled it, and he's saving it for us. That this hasn't been cursed with the ground that was cursed after Adam's sin. And when God is ready to transcend, for us to transcend and go from this existence to the world to come, he's going to give us from this fish. And this is food, clean food, which will completely replenish, not just replenish, it will make us bigger and expand until we get to the point that we'll be able to get to the world to come. Very, very different than we normally think, but this is all revealed by our sages right here on the page with the concept of God creating something from nothing. This sea giants, which they explain as the Leviathan, something from nothing because it's holy, it's spiritual, and God is preserving it for us for our final ascent into the world to come. Okay. Now, in case that wasn't enough, let's try and take this one level deeper. And please, please let me know if things need more clarity. Rabbeinu Bachai quotes the Rashba, and he goes on to explain that what's being alluded to over here is a completely different thing, a deeper thing, and this is what's going on. And I need to tread water carefully over here, but please bear with me. When we talk about God created the Leviathan as a male and a female, what does that signify? What does it signify that he created the Leviathan male and female? So male and female always means in the Torah, the concept of the male, the concept of the female always refers to the male being the giver and the female being the receiver. Now, please don't jump on me. let's follow this through. When I say giver and receiver, I don't mean where the male is always giving and the woman, all she does is stick out her hand to receive. But in every relationship, anytime something happens in the world, there always has to be, even the DNA, the makeup of the world, always has to be something giving, and then there has to be something that to receive it and to expand it and give it a form. If you think about, without going into too much detail, how a child is formed, the male is the one giving the original seed, and then the female receives it. Now, she doesn't just receive it. What she does is she receives it and gives it a form. So when I say receiver, I don't mean just stick out your hand and here, give me everything. I mean receive an idea and give it a form. So male is the original expression of giving. Female is the expression of receiving that and giving it a shape, which is why you're going to find all over the place that heaven is referred to as male, earth is referred to as female, because things come down from heaven. That's the male expression of giving. The earth receives it. The earth receives the rain. What does the earth do with it? It doesn't just receive it. It receives it, and things grow out of the earth. So you have a perfect balance between giver and receiver. We are the female in the relationship with God when God is giving to us, because we are receiving what he's giving to us. But then as a female, we are all females in this area that we need to receive it and give it a shape. Do the 613 solutions, how to give what we have just received, how to give it a shape. So that's what we refer to as male and female. Another way you could say male and female, which is all the same, is going to be body and soul. The soul is referred to as male. The body is referred to as female. Again, not to say that, oh, the male is great because he's the soul and the female is the lowly body. Not at all. The body and soul are equally important. The soul without the body couldn't do a thing. Tell me, how could a soul fulfill a commandment if the soul wouldn't have a body? On the other hand, how could a body do a commandment without the soul? So you have a perfect marriage, but the outpouring, what's coming down from above, is always coming from the soul. And that's why the soul is going to be referred to as male. The body, which receives what the soul is telling it to do and decides if the body wants to do it, that will be referred to as the female. God created the Leviathan, male and female. That means he created two forces in the world. He created the soul and he created the body. And God saw that if the body and the soul would come together too strongly, they would destroy the world. If the body and the soul would be in a perfect marriage of male and female, it would destroy the world. And you want to know why? Because imagine if the body would listen to everything that the soul tells it to do. There would be no purpose for creation. Free will would be eliminated. Imagine if the soul would completely dominate over the female, over the body, and completely dictate what it should be doing at every given moment. That means that the body would basically receive instructions from the soul. This is what you should do. Right now, study Torah. Right now, do an act of kindness. Right now, go to work. This is right. This is wrong. And nobody would sin. Nobody would make mistakes. Nobody would have free will, which means that the world is destroyed. Because what's the purpose of a world without free will? So when it says that God created male and female and he saw that if they would come together in a marriage, the world would be destroyed. What it's alluding to is that if the male and female aspect, the body and the soul, would be too close with each other in a marriage, that means that they would completely live with each other in harmony, that the body would fulfill every desire of the soul, the world would be destroyed because there would be no free will. So what did God do? What God did was he didn't give the male the ability to reproduce, which means on a very deep level that he took the soul and he limited its ability to give messages to the body, which means that the body isn't always picking up what the soul wants it to do. Really, the soul would always want to just be saying, do this, do that, do this, do that. He would always be telling us right from wrong. If that would be the case, there would be no purpose. So what God did was he took away its reproductive organ. That means he put a cap on its ability to shine, which is why if you look at the human being today, you will not see a soul. We mentioned this before. If you look on the face, you could see a soul a little bit, but the soul is definitely capped. When did the soul receive this cap that it doesn't just fill up the body? Why is the soul not filling up the body? Why is the soul not just overpowering the body and telling it what to do? Because God killed the male. That is the secret they're alluding to, that God took the male, the soul, and he said, don't shine your light too much, because if you do, there's going to be a problem, which means that now the body, in a certain sense, is going to die, because now the body is not always receiving direction from the soul, which means it's going to make mistakes. And when it makes mistakes, it's going to be disconnected from the soul. And when it's disconnected, imagine what happens to the earth when it doesn't receive the rain from the heaven. It's going to dry up. But here comes the final piece, and it's beautiful. God took the earth. He took the body, the female, and he salted it. And he's going to leave it for the righteous in the world to come, which means that the body will have a resurrection of the dead. This is where we're alluded to maybe the first time to to the concept in the Torah of resurrection of the dead. When God took the female, which we're explaining means the body, and he cut off its life source, cut off its life support, because he didn't want the soul to give it too much direction. And that's going to cause the body to die a little bit, because now it's disconnected. But he preserved it. That means he put in its DNA, that so long as it lives its life with the soul over its lifetime and fulfills what the soul wants it to do, even though it's going to make mistakes and sometimes you look at it and it'll look dead, it will come back for eternity. That's what it means. He's saving it. It's dead because at a certain sense, it's very disconnected from what the soul wants it to do. But so long as we prevail and we manage to do commandments over our lifetime, that body deep down is salted. It's preserved and will come back up for the world to come. Beautiful, beautiful concept. So when he took the male and female, which refers to the body and the soul, the issue with them coming together was that if we get too much direction, then we lose our free will. And when we lose our free will, there's no purpose for the world. So God separated them. He said the soul shouldn't give too much direction to the body. A little bit, but not too much. Allow there to be room for a mistake, which is going to cause the female to die a little bit. But we're going to preserve it. And we're going to allow it to come back for eternity in the world to come. And this is all alluded to in this concept called the Tanina Magdolim, the sea fish. And I have 2 more minutes, so let me quickly say about the blessing, and then we'll summarize. So it says that God blessed the fish. Why did the fish receive a blessing? So Rashi writes, because people go fishing and they kill them. And if you wouldn't give them a blessing, then they're going to go extinct. Question is, if so, why did the animals not receive a blessing? So Rashi writes, because he knew that one of the animals is going to be the snake. And the snake is the root of all evil in the world, because the snake caused the sin of Adam. We'll talk about that one day, God willing. And therefore, God did not want to give a blessing to all animals, which would include the snake, because that would mean that the force of evil would have too much power. So he did not give them a blessing, but fish do have a blessing. Like I mentioned before, because of this blessing, the fish have survived the flood, because they have a special blessing from God. The other pshat that the commentaries say is the reason why they needed a blessing. The Ramban writes this, and we don't find blessing on day 3. Why is it that the trees didn't get a blessing? So he says, because when God planted trees, he planted them everywhere. When he created the fish or the birds, he created just one male and one female. That's what he created. He made the prototype. He made a male and he made a female. Whenever he created an animal, he never created 100 elephants. He created a male and a female. The blessing is what gives them the ability to reproduce. So we take it for granted that male and female come together and they reproduce. But that's only because they got a blessing over here. So what this blessing was doing was saying that if you have one male and one female and they come together, that will multiply. That will give them the ability to reproduce. And that was all in the blessing of the fish. So if we're going to recap what we said today, it was a little bit of a deep one. The concept of day 5 is all things that are created from water. We spoke about the shape and form of earth. We spoke about the shape and form of heaven. Now we're speaking about things that are created from water. Fish, their bodies is from water. Birds is from water and from earth, but that earth is from the bedrock of the ocean. That is what we're talking about on day 5. The concept that it says the word creation, that they were created, these sea fish were created something from nothing, alludes to the fact that we're talking about very deep creations, which are from a very infinite place, which we like to call nothing, because that's the only word we could use to describe it. What was this sea fish? These sea fish was the Leviathan, the Leviathan. God created it as a male and a female. He took away the ability to reproduce in the male. He killed the female. What does this mean? So the layer number one, what we said was that the concept of God preserving this fish is the concept of preserving a very spiritual food, which will give us the ability to expand and transcend from this world to the world to come. After the sin of Adam, all food is cursed. Man is cursed. Food is cursed. And we're constantly losing life. And the food that we're eating is not replacing it. And we'd have no ability to live forever. So God put away food from the 6 days of creation and he saved it. That shouldn't be ruined by what goes on by mankind in the world. That is the final meal of our ascent into the world to come from the Leviathan. The concept of the male and female is the concept on a deeper level of the giver, the receiver, the heaven, the earth, the body and the soul, all the same things, if you line them up like that. And God saw that if the soul would have too much influence over the body, then it would destroy the world because we would lose our free will. We would be getting way too much insight, too much direction. And God wanted us to be missing. He wanted us to have to figure it out. He wanted to allow the ability for us to make a mistake. So he said that the soul should not give out all its light. It should hold itself back to give us the ability to choose. Do we want to listen to this niggling voice inside us? Do we not want to listen? It's not going to be too loud, that voice. It's going to be there, but we're going to have to decide, do we want to listen to it or could we just ignore it? He killed the female means that he disconnected it from its source of light in a certain sense, but he salted it because so long as during our lifetime we are able to prevail and listen to the voice of the soul, even though the body looks like it's very physical, in its DNA, it's salted, it's preserved for the world to come because the body will have the resurrection of the dead. When God willing, that will come. The reason why they received the blessing was because this is when male and female are receiving the marching orders that when they come together, they can reproduce and multiply and fill up the world. And that is the summary of day 5. So thank you all. And I hope everything was clear. And God willing, next week is a big one, without any question. Day 6 is the creation of animals and the creation of the human being in the form of God. So that is going to need a lot of explanation. I will do my best to make it clear. I'm trying to understand it myself. I got a week to get there. And then we'll go into Shabbos. 7th day will be the day of Shabbos. So day 6 and day 7. Thank you, everybody.